Welcome to this class called Taking the Wheel. So this is a class on leadership, a creative title for leadership. Our schools really present us with a lot of absurd situations, one of which is when parents, often middle-aged people, that have some experience with child training, probably are doing a pretty good job of child training, and then they choose to take their children and for 6 hours a day give them a leader who is not a parent, probably somewhat immature, and doesn't really have any parenting skills. Maybe not. So isn't that an odd choice for parents to make? How can a young teacher succeed as a leader with minimal prior experience? Their parents have some experience, but you may or may not. How do we succeed? So I think back over what did I do when I was a teacher. I taught for 3 years a while back, and I certainly fit the category of young and immature and inexperienced, but what did I do to have any measure of success? So I look back and I told my wife that all I see is a desert of mistakes with a few student camels trying to survive. Probably not entirely honest. But, you know, Josh here was one of my former students. So some of the things I talk about, he can evaluate their effectiveness, I suppose. But once he and I were talking about this, long after I had quit teaching, and I talked about that, I remember so many things I wish I would have done differently. And he told me that one of the things he appreciated about me when I was his teacher is that he could tell I was trying. So that's your first point, is try hard. Try to do your best. And, you know, in Salisbury, Maryland, where I taught, I know I made just a lot of mistakes there. But I still feel appreciated in that community when I go back, and I still love to go back. And I think part of it is because I do know that when I was a teacher, I honestly tried my very best. So that helps the desert look a little less barren, maybe. A new connection for me when I was thinking about this, we hear a lot about faithfulness, but I don't know that I connected doing my best with faithfulness. Isn't that what faithfulness is? Is doing your best? When you're a faithful Christian, you're doing your best. If you're a faithful employee, are there any faithful, lazy employees? We don't usually call those kind of guys faithful. Maybe they do show up for work every day, but we don't call them faithful in every aspect. So doing your best is being faithful. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful." Teachers are for sure stewards. They fit the category. So when we think about people that we relate to and our friends, we all appreciate people who try their best. That does not mean that they always get it right, but we do appreciate people who try to do their best. The best leaders in any organization or through history, examples you can think of, the best ones were the ones that honestly gave their best to the job they were trying to do. You can be a lot more patient with someone who's doing their best. You can be patient with students that you know are doing their best. It's a lot easier. It's hard to be patient with the guy that is struggling because he isn't doing his best. So in my talk, I've called these people triers. They try to do their best. So they're triers. Triers also will learn from mistakes more quickly and not repeat them because they're trying not to make mistakes. So this is kind of a foundational point for the rest of the talk. So let's identify a trier further, or think about that a little more, by answering the question, what are characteristics of a trier? I've talked about some of them, and maybe I can write a few things up here. A person who's trying hard, what are they going to be like?
Not afraid to make mistakes.
Okay. So, does that equal confidence? I'm not sure.
Or confidence slash humility, maybe. I don't know.
I don't feel confident in this market.
Here, we'll say he makes mistakes bravely. Anything else?
Try or someone who keeps trying, you know, not that they keep
perseverance.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure how to spell that. First or
perseverance.
Okay. Thank you. Or persistence, I guess I had that written down. And maybe kind of tied in with that, it's kind of like it says in Proverbs that the righteous man falls seven times. Well, why does he fall seven times? Well, he got back up every time, you know? So a trier won't stay down very long. Anything else? A person that tries hard, what are they characterized by?
I don't know if this is what you want, but they're willing to redirect. Something doesn't work, they try something else.
Mm-hmm. So try again. Yeah. Don't get stuck doing one thing. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll think more stuff later on. That's fine. So moving on to point number two, be humble. This one, we've been hearing a lot about these things. I think this is a review workshop for what, if you've had your ears on all week anyway, it's a review. So I put something on my notes here that Jerry Troyer said Tuesday. You cannot lead if you can't be led. That's humility, being willing to be led. And it's important for a person who's trying hard to be humble. Triers tend to have a problem with pride, don't they? I think they do. At least I did. In something Wendell Rohr was saying in one of the main addresses, he said something about that he wants to do things the best way. He wants to do it right. A trier is that kind of person. Wendell probably is a pretty good trier. I don't know him real well. But when I went into teaching, I wanted to do it right. And, you know, maybe there were some things, sometimes you might hear about your preceding teacher, and you might hear about some things that were a little shaky or some complaints. You think, you know what, I'm going to do it right. And maybe you find some things in how the school is operating or things like that. I'm going to do it right. I'm going to fix all that stuff. I'm going to be the hero. And you want to do your best. So it comes from a good motive, but it starts to, as Liz says, you get the big head. Maybe young men deal with that more than the girls. I don't know. But I remember that feeling just going into an established school and not necessarily regarding the establishment. I don't remember that I wrecked things up too badly, but just if I wanted to do it a different way, I thought it was better, well, I just did it. Maybe that's not all wrong, but that's a tendency that it can be a problem. So humble leadership is the most effective. Again, we're talking about leadership in our classrooms, or that's the big theme here. Now, one thing I thought about, that another place that this pride crops up in someone who's trying to do their best. When you're working with your students, we have a tendency that we want to be the master of what we're teaching them. And what's the difference between demonstrating adeptness and showing off? In a class, maybe you're really good at math, and you're teaching a math class, a new concept. Is it tempting to do an addition problem really fast, faster than your students can keep up with? Are you demonstrating adeptness, or are you showing off? Be humble. A great example of this, and this was okay, it was because it was kind of in fun, but my brother-in-law came and visited me recently, and we sat down at my piano together. Now, I am not an adept piano player, but I am much better than my brother-in-law because he can't play at all. So I said, well, Robert, come on over. Oh, you want to learn to play a scale, the fingering to play a scale? Oh, yeah, he did, so he sat down. So I put my hand up there on just the key of C, which is the simplest, and I went all the way down. He's like, oh. So then we kept going, and I kept doing it really fast, you know, down that. And he's like, and one time he said, stop showing off. So I did slow down. I was teaching him how you cross your fingers over. And so that was just funny. We're friends, and that was fine. But in the classroom, if you're going to teach somebody to play the scale, is the best way to demonstrate to immediately do it as fast as you can do it? Probably not. Be humble. What's the difference between showing off and showing demonstrating adeptness? A good leader shows how something is done, not just that it can be done. All right, still talking about humility. You've got to admit your mistakes. You're going to make them, but you've got to admit them. So in the people that you've worked for, maybe it's bosses, maybe it's your parents, whatever, but we're much more willing to work hard for a leader who admits his failures and tries to correct them. It is hard to work for a belligerent know-it-all. That just is not comfortable. Again, I go back to my own experience, and I remember a time I had to do this in an embarrassing big way. It started this way. My job is working in installing and servicing garage doors. So before I started teaching, my experience in the workplace was some on construction sites, places where mostly a male-dominated workplace. Guys give each other a hard time. That's just, especially in construction crews anyway, that's just what we do. You know, I still can walk onto a construction site where I know nobody, and sometimes I'll just immediately pick a guy out at random, and you just joke with him, can you do that any faster, or, just all kinds of things. And you laugh and ha-ha, and you just, that's how you relate on construction sites. Well, I didn't know that didn't work in a classroom. So the first year I taught, I think it kind of works with the boys. I think it's kind of a guy thing, but you can kind of, at least I was teaching upper grade, so you can give the upper grade boys kind of a harder time, and it's probably kind of fun. But it doesn't work to give upper grade girls a hard time. So unfortunately, I didn't figure all that out for quite a while. Finally, so when I got to the first day of my second year of school, I was able to pleasantly surprise them, I think, with a fairly lengthy apology, particularly to the girls. And I don't remember if I made much explanation that I had no intent of hurting their feelings, but I guess I just didn't know better. That got things off to a good start that year. And the that year and the following years I taught, I worked a lot harder on how I joked with my students. There's a good way to joke, and then there's a bad way to joke that hurts feelings. So, admit your mistakes and apologize for them. Apologize for little things that just simply didn't go as planned. Maybe something that disrupted your student's schedule, made their work take a little longer, or maybe you weren't prepared for a class the way you wanted to and ended up wasting some of their time. You just need to apologize. I heard about one teacher that looked forward to apologizing because it always got such good results. And I kind of, I don't know if I looked forward to it. I didn't look forward to making mistakes. But apologies for little things are pretty easy to do, and they just make everybody feel better. A genuine apology always puts, or almost always puts, your students on your side. And when in doubt, apologize. Think, I don't know, well, did I do something? If you're in doubt about whether you did something wrong, well, just go ahead and apologize for it, and probably you'll be the better off for it. Take some blame if you have to, even if you don't really think it was all your fault. I had an experience with that just a week or two ago. We put in a new door for a customer, and he said, oh, it's supposed to have the decorative hinges and handles on the front. Well, in the brochure, that's actually shown on the picture, but that's an add-on. I didn't really necessarily feel like it was my fault, because most everybody knows that, but the fact was I hadn't communicated that to him, so I said, well, I'm sorry, I should have told you. And it was easy. We've resolved it easily. But I took some blame and said, well, I'm sorry, I should have told you. All right, one more thing about humility is seek advice. Now, you need to ask, you can ask a lot of people for advice. You need to ask your school board for advice. And I think we need to ask our school boards for advice even when you don't think they have a clue what to do. Unfortunately, sometimes our school boards can feel pretty much like they don't have any teaching experience, maybe they aren't paying much attention. It feels like they're going to have nothing to say about what I'm dealing with. But one time, a school board member that helped me turn around an algebra class that was really having trouble for me, because I asked him. Now, as far as I know, he never taught, never was a teacher, but he came and I said, we're having so much trouble with this algebra. My students just are not getting it done. It's taking way too much time. What can I do? He said, well, have you thought about using calculators? Well, no. I hadn't. Why don't we start doing that? So that was a big help. I was, again, I was being a trier, and I wanted them to learn how everything worked, and the best way to do that is do all your work by hand, all this. Well, you know, they had done that for long enough, they were kind of getting it. It was time to start introducing the calculator a little bit. So he bailed me out on that one. All right. Any comments or discussion about be humble?
But you're not going to attach meaning to the outcome in the sense that it reflects so much on you. It helps you to be humble. If it doesn't work out, you're willing to try something else or get advice because it doesn't reflect on your worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You can be humble enough to say, okay, let's try something else. I think that's where pride comes in sometimes, is we attach our worth to it a little bit, and you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Just because you failed doesn't mean that you categorically are a failure.
You're a teacher, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number three, be caring. Someone who's trying hard to be a great teacher, a pretty easy temptation is to push your students too hard. At least it was for me. Expect too much of them. And it's hard sometimes to be sensitive to factors in students' lives. Health issues, and that can just cover a huge string of things, but I don't know, I don't do well when I have to work like crazy and I don't feel good. Sometimes it's issues, struggles at home, maybe even things you can't identify with, but they're part of that child's experience, and you have to be sensitive to that. A leader that ignores the limitations of his followers is bound for trouble. You know, I worked for a man quite some time ago, very interesting fellow, because he'd spent a lot of his life operating a pack string, doing packing way out into the outback for like government contracts, stuff like that. So, you know, he had a string of pack horses. And he talked about packing out like elk, you know, hunters, working for hunters and packing out their elk. And he talked about in one place that was really rough country, they're going up the real steep side of the mountain, and to get up to the top, they had to jump up on a 5-foot ledge or something like that, you know, about this high. His horses had to jump. And so he was riding his lead horse. All his other horses were carrying, I think he said they would carry around 100, 150 pounds. So they all have to be able to make that jump. And he talked about he had a good pack string, and that wasn't a problem. And said if they trust you, they'll go anywhere you go. And so he was a good packer, and he got his horse. So he was telling me that story. So just because his lead horse can make the jump, it's not going to do any good if his pack horses can't make the jump. So, same thing with our students. If you ignore their limitations, you're bound for trouble. If you're having trouble with, or you feel like you're overworking your students, try to kind of put yourself in the mind of each of your students, not just a fast one. Take a slow one. Think how they feel when they come in and see their assignments on the board and just know, or you know, they just think never going to get done. Just a suggestion for trying to think how they feel. Sometimes a teacher or a leader must do extra to help a struggling student. I spent, there were numerous different times that I spent time I wouldn't have had to helping students. I remember a couple different times talking, they just weren't getting their homework done and they were just getting further and further behind. So I said, all right, talk to their mom, say, can I keep so-and-so after school for a while? And you can turn it into a fun thing, you know, after school, take a few minutes, run around, have a little bit of time, come back in, give them a snack. And some of them I remember one time I didn't even help that much. She just sat at her desk and did her homework and got done. And she just didn't have any of the distractions. All of the pressure was at the right places, and she got her homework done. I remember going to one girl that was really struggling with her algebra, spent a whole long time on Saturday helping her, again, catch up with homework and get up to where she needed to be. Be willing to make those sacrifices, or be caring enough to make those sacrifices to put your students where they need to be. And it's actually kind of fun, or it's rewarding at any rate. If it isn't fun, it's for sure rewarding. And another thing that should always pop into your mind, food of some kind should always be used in those kinds of things. Yeah, it helps. On the subject of being caring, I talked about home situations that can be a problem. And I remember my two co-teachers, we had just a real bum deal during the time that I was teaching there. There was a mom that had left her husband and her girls and taken off, and so the dad was trying to raise his daughters, and so there was a lot of emotional upheaval, and the dad was kind of a piece of work himself. And so my co-teachers kept those, the girls from that family at different times. They would keep them after school. And some of it was to help with their work, and some of it was just to give them, just to play with them and be nice to them and try to be a friend. I think that was successful, but it took more of those girls' time. Try to be caring. Let me back up. When you're a trier, when you're pushing hard, you want to do it right, get a lot done. It's hard to be caring about, or it's hard to seem caring to your students about how hard the work is. Now that doesn't mean that they don't have to do the work, but if you at least give a little bit of sympathy, in some way, you can. It feels like you care. At least you understand. And I think teachers should always have some kind of candy in their desk somewhere. And when somebody has a hard, some grade has a hard lesson in something, well, after a while, just start throwing candy bars at them, and things will perk up, most likely. Another thing that I think about from my experience, be willing to do anything you ask your students to do. So that kind of sounds like the military. If you listen to stories about guys in the military, you'll hear that in basic training. The instructors ran just as far as all the recruits, all that kind of thing. So I'm not really going for that kind of a vibe, but your students aren't slaves. And, you know, if the microwave is really super gross dirty, then don't pick out a student and say, all right, you need to go clean the microwave. Be willing to do some of those nasty things yourself, just to be nice. I remember one story that illustrates this. I wasn't on the job, but my brother and a boy that was working for us at the time, this was years ago, they were working together on a garage door job, and we have, for low voltage wiring, we have little kits with lots of little pocket dividers in them, and all kinds of little electrical connectors. And they're all divided by different kinds and different wire gauges and all this. Well, somewhere in there, this boy dumped the whole thing on the floor. So there's probably a couple hundred pieces in there, and they're spread everywhere. So my brother, who would have been the boss in that situation, they got down on their hands and knees, and they picked it all up. And when they got done, that boy told Jake, I've never had a boss that would have helped me do that before. So be that boss, be that leader that is willing to help when you can. Don't just make students do it. Okay, number four. Well, does anybody have a comment on being caring?
Your students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Mm-hmm. And it probably matters more how much you care than how much you know. Jonathan Erb said, as long as you're one lesson ahead of them, that's the minimum requirement. All right, number four, discipline wisely. Maybe these seem like kind of random things, and I guess maybe they kind of are. They're the points that came to my mind as I was studying this. So we go from being caring to being a good discipliner, I guess. Part of leadership is taking responsibility for behavior in your classroom. Now, from a distance, I watched a very negative example of this. So there was a classroom that the year before had been, it was not flawless, but it was under control, it was doing well, there was order, and there was a reasonable amount of respect. This was, again, upper grades. So a new teacher came in to replace the previous one, and I watched him ruin the classroom in a year's time. By the end of the year, there was terrible respect issues, and it was a fiasco. He actually did continue teaching. And I think I was quite removed, so I'm not sure what will happen. But it was It went downhill fast. And here again, I was at a distance, but part of his problem was how he disciplined. And, you know, some of you all are younger grade teachers, and I can't identify with that very well because I only taught upper grades. But in the upper grades, it's especially important how you discipline. Part of this man's problem, it was kind of a tit-for-tat approach. You sat in your desk and carried on with your buddy, then you're going to get moved. And I wasn't there, obviously. I don't know if there was discussion about this or not. But for me, clear communication and occasional consequences work the best. Now, again, this is upper grade. Maybe younger children, you got to do it differently. One example I remember when I was a first year teacher and really didn't have a great handle on things. It was early in the year, so I found a fine young lady who unfortunately was quite shy and scared of me. And I caught her cheating. And how I knew that she was cheating was we had a kind of a CLE classroom, so they checked a lot of their own work. So how I knew that she was cheating was she was going and checking her work, and when she got a wrong answer, instead of going to her desk and making the correction like she was supposed to, she was just writing in the right answer from the answer key. So I knew that she was cheating. And so I don't remember that I got terribly hard. I think I made her put her book on my desk for a while to check it. And I think that was about it. But it did embarrass her. Well, later in parent-teacher meeting, I learned from her parents that they don't really think she knew she was doing anything wrong. So the problem was that I hadn't clearly, or she hadn't understood my communication on what you were supposed to do. Because I think that was the first year they had done this, done the thing where they checked their own work. I don't think she was cheating a bit. So before you start, when you think you've got a discipline problem, make sure that your students understand what they're supposed to do. Again, maybe that plays out differently in younger classrooms, but probably some of it holds true. I had another student. He's a fine young man now. It just kind of makes me laugh when I think about this. But he was not a fast student. He worked hard, and he got pretty good grades, but he didn't have much free time. So I taught him one year. I knew where his grades ought to be, and I had some background. So the second year, we get the school year started, and he's got quite a bit of free time. And his grades were quite low. And I watched this for a little bit, thought, what is going on with this guy? So finally one day I kept him in the recess. I said, well, I don't remember what I asked him, but something about why, what's going on here? What could you do to get your grades back up? And a few tears showed up. He said, well, you probably could work a little harder. All right, bingo. I think you got that. And you know, he went right back to the same performance as the previous year. Worked hard, got reasonable grades. There was no discipline needed. It was just a little talking to. So I present that as opposed to the tit for tat. You aren't trying hard enough, some punishment. Maybe that would have worked for that boy, but it sure would have made him suffer a lot more than just a little chat. I think communication, when you're disciplined, and this is even for younger students, I think, communication is just super key to any disciplinary measure working. Help the students understand the reason an activity is inappropriate. Just don't assume that they know why they shouldn't have done that. So, you know, you send your students out to go run around the school in the middle of a class period or something for an exercise or something, and they go whooping and hollering all around and just disturb the peace for the whole school. So you come back in, so what are you going to do? Are you just going to crack down on them? Or are you just going to say, you know what? What would it be like if you're trying to do a spelling test and somebody comes running by the window hollering his head off? Oh, yeah, that wouldn't be nice. Maybe that's all it takes. Make sure they understand why what they're doing is inappropriate. Point out the seriousness of disobedience or of being inconsiderate. Try to make them think about what it would be like if it happened to them. I think sometimes it's okay to tell them that what they're doing is just really making a real problem for me. I'm kind of busy around here, and what you're doing is you're making this hard for me. So why don't you stop? Sometimes that's all it takes. You know, and you all know this, but ask your students to what can you do to correct this? And maybe sometimes you have to guide that process a little bit, but sometimes they have very good ideas of something to break a bad habit or something. I think that how you handle discipline will make or break you in the classroom. Leaders want to change more than behavior. They want to change the thoughts and habits that control the behavior. Consequences are proper and necessary, but an impact on the seat of the pants is not always the best way to make an impact between the ears. Sometimes it's a question of if you should discipline, but usually the question is how you should discipline. Ron, do you have anything to add or subtract to that?
I think developing character is more important than just punishing wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
And I know there's horror stories out there where you're dealing with very rebellious children that it just really doesn't seem to work. My experience was with a really good group of students. And while there was things needed corrected, they were eager to please. That helps a lot. So I hope your classroom's that way too. Any comments or questions about discipline in your classroom?
I think that's a great environment. That's where you're talking about, you know, talking to them first. And the whole thing of a warning being a courtesy, not a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that really works.
Mm-hmm. All right, going to hustle along here. Two more points. First one is manage well. And I think that if you want to be a good leader, or good leaders are good managers. And while discipline is going to will solve part of your behavior issues, management's probably going to solve a whole lot more of them. Proper management. That's what I think anyway. We know that students do well in an orderly, well-managed classroom, and we know that that's because they know what to expect. There's a routine, and everything is not chaotic every day. So that's good management, is just having a schedule, sticking to it, and making it a usable schedule. But I think good teachers that are trying to do their best, need to always be on the lookout for something that you're doing that's making your students work harder than they need to. So ideas that I remember thinking about. Can you schedule the day differently so that students get more study time? Is there a creative way to handle that? I substituted in Conrad's room here last year, and Conrad had a thing in place where they had a certain time in the day where everybody quit their work, pulled a book out of their desk, and started reading. Conrad knows what he's up to, so apparently that was not slowing his students down in the work that they needed to get done that day. In my classroom, that would have been a bad idea. Reading is a great thing, but maybe you don't need that in your schedule. Do your best to be prepared so that you aren't wasting your students' time in class, in how you assign things throughout the day, how you schedule your classes throughout the day. Do your best to communicate the schedule to your students, and you can do that anyway, whether you do it verbally or write it up, all kinds of things like that, so that they know what to expect, and if they aren't prepared, I guess it's their fault, not yours, for older students particularly. Telling stories and jokes is great, and you get all kinds of input on, or around here, that you need to tell stories, you need to be interesting. But sometimes I think you've got to watch how interesting you are, because Johnny is back there in the back trying to do his work and he's tuning in on you. Maybe you can promise to tell a story at lunchtime or something. Sometimes you can let a student stay in at a break if he voluntarily wants to try to get a little more work done so he doesn't have homework that day. You can work all kinds of things out. Now, the next point is pretty important, I think. Manage your way out of behavior frustrations. And it can be things like bad handwriting, or they aren't pushing their chair in at their desk. One of the last years Rhonda taught, they weren't washing their hands when they go to the bathroom. I mean, how simple is that? But they weren't doing it. Maybe you want to try checking in class, but it just goes super slow and there's 100 questions while you're trying to get through. You can manage your way out of a lot of those things. Put a procedure in place, practice it some way. Sometimes one way to fix something is consistency. Instead of changing every week or something, have one student do it for a long time, maybe a month, so that they get the routine in their head and they do it automatically every day. Maybe it's something like putting out the songbooks or something. If he does it every day for half a year, he'll remember it probably. Manage your way out of your own jobs that are frustrations. One thing that I kind of had a little light bulb that came on one day. I was sitting at my desk, and I had been spending, you know, every week I would write up teams for the games we were going to play, and I would plan recesses, and I would spend a bunch of time doing this. And one day I thought, doing, I bet I have some fine students that could do this. So I taught them a little bit. We put in place what was called the game committee. And they were responsible for scheduling. They were responsible for the game choices. They were responsible for the team. I didn't ever worry about recess again. And when the teams needed reorganized because somebody wasn't there, that was not my problem. That saved me a ton of frustration. On the back of your handout is a guide for planning student devotionals. I was able to manage my way down to where I presented one devotional per week in my classroom. So, you know, a lot of schools have some different things they do with the whole school. They're singing, all these different things. And so one of the ways I got rid of one day was I had one day responsibility for me was have student devotionals. And again, I put a student committee in place. They planned the schedule. They planned the song leader. We had two people presenting devotionals. And then at the end, we had a breakdown of their public speaking technique. And so this devotional pattern was the guide they had for preparing their little devotionals. I can tell you more about that later. I think that was quite a success. So I was going to ask for a discussion on what frustrations you've managed your way out of. And I think I should go on to this last one because it's kind of important too. But one thing that I think you should make a habit, like at the end of every month or every 2 weeks, something, you should sit down for a few minutes and write down the top 5 things that are frustrating you. Some of them you can't do anything about, but figure out which ones you can. And probably it's pretty simple to solve just a few little things that are bugging you to no end. The last point is be respectable. Proverbs says a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. So a man that is respected must show himself respectable as well. A lot of what we've talked about has to do with that, behaving in a respectful way. I think something we need to remember is respect your students. I hear people talking sometimes about how that respect in our classrooms is going down. It's not, the students are not nearly as respectful as they used to be. Part of that is our culture, but I also wonder, the culture is affecting our teachers too. Are our teachers being as respectful to their students as they ought to be? For a little example, I heard of a student talking about his teacher one time, and he told this little story about his teacher came up behind him sitting at his desk and went, boo, and scared him. Sometimes, though, I don't know what the setting was. Maybe that was fine, just a little joke. You do those kind of things, but how respectful are you being of your students? I know of one of my wife's friends, that she had young students in her classroom. For a whole year, she made them call each other Mr. and Miss. So this was Mr. Jeremy and Mr. Josh, and they called each other with titles of respect the whole year. as much as possible, respect their privacy, respect their desk, or their privacy includes a number of things, their desk, their trips to the restroom, their injuries, their wardrobe malfunctions. Some of those things are challenging sometimes, but try to treat them with, maintain your own dignity and treat them with respect. Thank God for co-teachers. Sometimes that is about the only way to bail yourself out of those situations. And one final thing. Remember that a huge part of earning your students' respect is earning their parents' respect. Where do those parents see you? They see you just about everywhere. Be respectable. As you take the wheel in your classroom this year, remember there is no autopilot feature. You will have to drive it. But there is helpful navigation from other people and our Heavenly Father. And remember, U-turns are allowed when appropriate.